This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
The budget battle begins.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gow. The war of words over the president's $3 trillion spending plan will only get louder today. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and White House Budget Director Jim Nussle will be on Capitol Hill for hearings. Given the reaction so far, those two are in for an earful from some members of Congress. Jeremy Hobson reports from Washington.
North Dakota Democrat Kent Conrad, who chairs the Senate Budget Committee, will be leading the attack on the administration today. He says the budget proposal leaves out the full cost of Iraq and a permanent patch for the alternative minimum tax.
They just aren't being square with the American people.
Even Brian Riedel of the Conservative Heritage Foundation says the president should have made a, quote, true estimate of some of the nation's looming financial commitments. But he did applaud the president for proposing to rein in entitlement programs.
I'm not 100% pleased with the president's budget, but it's impossible to please everybody.
Riedel says it will be quite the challenge to deal with an estimated $410 billion deficit in a presidential election year. Senator Conrad's with him on that one.
Somebody asked me if this was debt on arrival, and I said it was debt on departure. You know, you're getting ready to leave town, you're going to leave a debt bomb behind.
In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Banks are tightening the old purse strings, even for people with good credit. A Fed survey says more than half of U.S. banks have tightened their lending standards on prime mortgages. That's up from 40% in November. For the stock markets, same old, same old. In Asia today, the markets fell about 0.5%. European shares are down a fraction so far. Yesterday, the Dow lost 108 points to 12,635. The NASDAQ dropped 30 to 2382, and the S&P 500 fell 14 to 1380. Today, Burt's Bees launches a national ad campaign that's proving abrasive to its skincare rivals. The company is rolling out magazine ads that point out the synthetic ingredients in certain well-known beauty products, compared, of course, to Burt's more natural ingredients. It's kind of a bold move, especially when you consider that Burt's Bees is now owned by Clorox. Sarah Gardner reports from our sustainability desk.
One ad asks, "Have you read your body lotion label lately?" It then compares Burt's milk and honey ingredients to a common cosmetic preservative that can release formaldehyde. Some critics find it ironic Burt's Bees is bashing chemicals now that its new owner makes bleach. But Stacey Malkin at the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics says she thinks the provocative ads are a smart move.
Because there's growing consumer demand for safer and non-toxic products. And companies that are making safer products need to find a way to let consumers know that.
The Personal Care Products Council doesn't think so. The trade group's John Bailey says the ads mislead consumers into thinking natural ingredients are inherently safer.
This is not supported by the science and the record in the marketplace for these products.
As for a bleach company like Clorox owning an earthy company like Burt's Bees, Clorox just partnered recently with the Sierra Club to launch a new line of natural household cleaners. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
You just never know who you're going to meet. An Iowa couple was eating out last week when a man approached them and offered a blank check. He insisted they fill it out. They did, for $100,000. They were surprised when the check actually cleared. The man did give them some conditions. They can't reveal their names or his. They have to use the money to buy a house. And if they have a kid together, he asked they name the child after him.
Thank you.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Grant Thornton, dedicated to serving their clients worldwide with a passion for the business of accounting. On the web at grantthornton.com. And by LendingTree, where you can choose up to 4 customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win.
Have you gotten your fill of election coverage yet? I hope not. There's a long way to go, even after today's Super Tuesday voting. Last presidential election, political books did well. Books from President Clinton, Bob Woodward, and The Daily Show all hit the bestseller lists. But recently, political book sales haven't been so good. More now from Ashley Milne-Tite.
Last year was a letdown for political publishers. Valerie Plame's book flopped, and Coulter's latest anti-liberal critique hasn't sold half as well as her last, published in 2004. Doug Muzio teaches public affairs at New York City's Baruch College. He says during the last election season, politics was still dominated by one polarizing figure, and his policies stirred up a left-right loathing that got people reading.
It was stimulated by George Bush, both pro and con. It's 4 years later. George Bush is somewhat of an irrelevancy. He doesn't generate the heat that he once did.
Still, the publishing cycle hasn't slowed. There are 100 political titles on publishers' spring lists. There's always the possibility of a surprise bestseller. In 2004, it was the anti-Kerry book, Unfit for Command. But Jim Milliot of Publishers Weekly says an election year can pose a problem for publishers. The closer the election gets, books about politics have to compete for publicity with the real thing.
They're not going to be publishing some of their high-profile books around the election because there's just no media time. You're not going to get on the Today Show. You're not going to get on Tim Russert.
Books have to compete for readers as well. Doug Muzio says political junkies like him are addicted to all forms of election coverage this time round, whether it be newspapers, television, radio, or blogs.
You know, every day you wake up and you read the news and you can get into it. Reading a book sort of diverts you from the immediacy of the fix.
Jim Milliot says publishers are hoping 2009 could be a potentially blockbuster year. He says as soon as the election is over, they'll be busy pursuing potential authors who haven't yet told all.
And then going running around, signing up whoever hasn't written a book in the cabinet, and of course, getting the president himself.
Readers may have to wait a few years for that one. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.